Blog Talk Radio.
It's time to get real. Oh, yeah. It's a new experience.
Spirituality.
Yeah, keep your ears open for this one, man.
Spirituality.
You got a question for RLM?
Spirituality.
Yeah, it's time to get some answers, baby.
Get real and welcome everyone. Welcome to Reality Spirituality. I'm your host, Rebecca Lynn Norrington. I'm trying to launch the chat room, but I'm not having any success with that. But the show must go on. Reality Spirituality, what is that? What kind of show is this for all my new listeners? Well, Reality Spirituality is not a religion. It's a guide to living connected. Living connected to our most powerful energy source. And what is our most powerful energy source? Well, some people use the term God. Some people say Buddha, higher power, source energy. I like to use the term universe. And basically, this show shares with the audience, shares with my listeners how to live connected in every waking moment of your life. And that's not easy to do because I have lived most of my life the opposite way. But I, as I share with my listeners, I wanted two things when I was growing up. I wanted to live to my potential. And I wanted to be happy. And so the universe has actually given me insights, strategies, tools, behaviors, different perspectives to remain happy and sustain my happiness regardless of what happens to me, regardless of my circumstances. And when I use the word happy, I'm not talking about this external happiness that comes and goes. I'm talking about a foundational happiness, an internal happiness, a happiness that is basically a peace, an inner contentment, a knowing that whatever happens, whatever is happening, whatever place, situation I find myself in, I can remain peaceful and content and quiet and trusting and not resisting and flowing with anything. And so that's the kind of happiness that I'm talking about, and that's what this show is about, sharing ways and strategies how to stay like that moment by moment. So Reality Spirituality, it's not a religion. It just shares with my audience strategies. And this show focuses on our everyday life experiences. I'm talking about from the rude cashier to missing the bus to having a conflict or challenge in any kind of relationship, whether it's work, personal. It doesn't matter, our moment-by-moment, everyday life experiences. And one of my favorite quotes of all time is by Abraham Hicks, you know, Jerry and Esther Hicks. And Abraham says, "You cannot have a happy ending to an unhappy journey." And so this show dissects our everyday life, dissects it to the least common denominator to discover why we're not as happy as we can be in every moment. Now, our Saturday shows are really special because on Saturday we have guests from all over the world, and today I'm so excited to introduce her. Her name is Deborah Parker, and Deborah Parker believes in using the wits and gifts that God has given her to help others professionally and personally. So building on her beginnings as the oldest child of a determined single parent and was raised in a home with her wise grandparents, she is a sought-after speaker on leadership, motivation, diversity, and careers. This is one of my favorite things, Deborah, whether you realize it or not, but this is one of my favorite sentences in your paragraph. Along the way, Deborah has encountered various setbacks, but her faith has seen her through. Putting all of these experiences together, she encourages others to never count herself out. And she spreads her information and her practical messages in print. She's authored 3 books, including Navigating Life's Roadways, Stories of Insight from My Odyssey and Inspiration for Your Journey. And she's written her second book for People of Strength, Soul and Spirit, 7 Guidelines for Life and Career Successes. And her recent book, Hardcore Leadership, 11 Master Lessons from My Airborne Ranger Uncle's Back Final Jump. What? Okay, Deborah, here we go. Welcome to reality.
All right, first of all, good morning. Good morning, Rebecca, and thanks for having me on as a guest today.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Now, I shared with you a little bit earlier, but this show is really about, we're going to get into your beginnings, but this show is really about sharing, I like to say, behind the scenes, what happens behind the scenes. So, but let's start with your beginnings, Deborah. Give us a little bit of background of your journey in the beginning.
Okay. Well, in the beginning, as I have in my bio, I was born to a very determined single parent. My mother was actually a high school senior when I was born, and you say that was a very challenging time for her and the family. You know, my grandparents, my maternal grandparents, are people from the early 1900s, and one had a third grade education, the other one had a fourth grade education, but they did, you know, they worked really hard to raise their children, so that was a difficult time, but they pushed through. And one of the signs of that for me is that my mother actually went back to high school to finish her senior year the next year after I was born. And I just lauded that so much because, again, we look at some of the things that are going on today, and a lot of young ladies, if they get pregnant in high school, won't go back to school, don't want to go back to school. So for my mother to have done that in 1955, so I'm sharing what year I was born, again, was a really big deal. And so the message was, as I was able to digest that, as I got older, is that the education matters. So, but with that piece, I'm finding not just that, but other things that were a part of my beginnings have just resonated with me in very different ways as I've gotten older. So, but my mother did eventually get married, and I have 3 other siblings, and my stepfather had abandoned the family by the time I was 5. But my mother pressed on as a very focused, like I said, and determined single parent, and we did continue to live in the home with my maternal grandparents, a small town in rural Virginia. Also, I like to tell people it's peanut country. And we lived in what's called a shotgun-style house. You know, 3 rooms on each side, no hallways, no indoor plumbing.
My
mother worked as a domestic, then she worked in a factory. My grandfather worked at a mill. So the other message I got from that is that, you know, you do labor. You work your very hardest to take care of your responsibilities. And the household was very very disciplined. But we were also, there were also rituals we went through as children, and one of those was as a part of our faith, that at 9 years old, we were Baptists, at 9 years old, you would submit your belief by being baptized in our hometown church. So as I said, just more messages that as I've gotten, as I said, chronologically gifted or older, you know, those rituals, that discipline has become even more powerful. And, of course, you know, I was encouraged by teachers and my mother, who the other thing she did was she taught me how to read and write before I went to first grade because we did not have kindergarten back then. So, again, the importance of learning, or as in our southern dialect, they used to say, get your lesson.
Yeah.
Again, was just so critical to my the rest of my journey.
Okay, so you so and let me share with you. I'm a 1955 baby, also.
Ah.
Yeah. And I wear it proudly, and I say it proudly because it doesn't feel like 1955. I feel like I'm still youngster. But let me just so you were raised in a very strict rule, you know, with a lot of rules and a lot of structure. Yes.
Mhm.
I can definitely relate to that, and it's interesting because I was raised the same way, and I have to say, Deborah, that my nature. Who I am, my nature is not to be structured. My nature is not to be structured and not to follow rules. So I don't know about you. Are you still like the structure and you still like the rules?
No.
I do believe that
foundation is important.
What? Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, I do believe that foundation is important when you are a child.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I do, it helps you deal with some aspects of the world where there are some rules and what have you. And
yeah.
The other thing is that, a little bit later, it helped me for studying when I was in school. And a little bit later, I actually served in the military, in the Army. So it also helped me in that structure for a period of time. But I also came to realize that, you know, I do enjoy a sense of autonomy and freedom. And you note, I have a business. So, and I operate my business out of my offices in my home. So one thing I enjoy is, you know, not having, I certainly have a little bit of structure in terms of how I do things in my home office. But I tell people I don't like having a boss. And except, you know, again, my clients become my bosses. But also the autonomy to look at my schedule and determine what my day is going to be like, my week, or when I'm going to take time off. So without having to ask permission.
Okay. Yeah, I understand what you're saying. You're saying that basically, you make your own structure, and you're doing this for your now. You've created your own structure and your own organization.
Yes.
Yeah, I understand now. What are some of your actually give me one of the biggest challenges that you've had in your life? What was it, and how were you able to digest it, and come out of it?
Yeah.
Your biggest challenge, and then what were your lessons from that? That's what I want to ask.
Well, you know, again, going back to my beginnings, as I said, my mother was a single, you know, parent. So certainly the absence of having a father, and you know, it's a whole other story about, you know, how I found out who my biological father was, and some of the pieces around that. But so I probably started to feel that more as I went out on my own because the way it was balanced. As I said, you know, I was in the home with my maternal grandparents, so my grandfather actually called him Daddy. And I also grew up around supportive extended family, so, you know, aunts and particularly uncles who also paid some attention to me. So, and I often tell people that I probably miss having a father more now than I was when I was younger because I did have that extended family. So needless to say, is that absence of a father, though, has played out in my choices of relationships at times in terms of, you know, the type of men I've been involved with. And so, for example, unfortunately, I've had times where I've been involved with men who were not available to me. They were married, you know, otherwise committed. So, okay. So it took me a while to work through that type of challenge, and I certainly have talked to professionals about it. So, so now, again, I did most of that in my younger years, you know, and now it's about, you know, making sure my life is full in other ways. I, you know, certainly have male friends who I spend time with occasionally, but also the other types of activities I'm involved with, you know, organizations I belong to that also help bring that life balance. And I realize that, as they say, it is what it is. So,
okay, so can you get specific? Can you get specific with a challenge that you had, something specific that was really huge in your life, if you would like to share with us, and it doesn't
okay,
matter.
Okay, so that was one early on. Another challenge was the way that probably also manifested itself was a challenge with depression.
okay.
Yeah, and you know, had some a few major incidents around my depression, and you know, looking at you know what's going on with me. At that moment, and some of it does circle back to, you know, probably not having that fatherly love, you know, balance. Because, you know, parental love is different from, like, say, you know, I have my grandfather, my uncles, parental love is just very different. So so that started to, I guess, get inside of me and led me to some pretty low moments. But what I've discovered during that process, as I said in my bio, I said you never count yourself out. So I have discovered in terms of, again, I'm Baptist, so the way God works with my life is that sometimes those low moments are necessary for me to spend more time with him, gather strength, and prepare me for the next thing he has for me in my life. After my first major depression, I came out of that, actually, and started my business. And this was back in 1992. So just really, you know, becoming more, you know, certainly self-encouraging, self-motivating, being clear on my purpose, paying attention to the signs and signals that are presenting themselves to me about where I'm supposed to be. And certainly in a moment of depression, you know, again, you know, the self-reflection, the emotions, the crying, all of those in a way have brought a certain amount of clarity to me. So that was, you know, my first major episode. And then the second worst episode is when my mother passed away 3 years ago. She had leukemia. It was 9 months from her diagnosis to her passing. She was only 72 and a very robust 72. And it was, you know, certainly that just rocked my world, as they say, in ways I could not even imagine, because I think so many of us, we want to imagine our parents being here forever. But the other piece of that, you know, was certainly watching my mother suffer, and then I was also appointed to settle her life, settle her affairs. So trying to do that in the midst of grieving, and so the images of her in her final days, all those things just really stuck with me for a while. And because I am the oldest, needs to say there were conversations that we had that were just very difficult as well. But as I came out of that grieving process, again, and from a spiritual standpoint, I started to sense my mother's presence. She knew of my aspirations, for example, to write books. And so in the midst of grieving the loss of my mother, again, as I came up out of that low moment, you know, I kept asking God, what am I supposed to do? And boom, in the last 2 years, I've published 3 books.
Okay.
So
okay,
I say that my mother's my spiritual co-author in that process.
Oh, I love
so,
that. I love
yeah,
that, Deborah.
So as I said, never count
that.
Yourself out.
Right. So you know what? You've touched on a lot of really interesting points, and you were general, but really, really good points. Number one is you talked about, you know, going through. Listen. All of us go through. Listen, I'm just free on my show. All of us go through shit. All of us do. And honestly, this is one of the things I share with my listeners. We are as individual as our fingerprints. And each one of our journeys is here to teach us, to show us there are lessons in everything that happens.
Mm-hmm.
And just like you said, the depression, in other words, I believe that our most challenging circumstances are the ones where we grow the most.
Yeah.
And so.
Yeah. When my mother was sick, there was a poem called "It's in the Valley I Grow,"
mm-hmm.
and I used to read that to her.
Okay. Yeah.
And
yeah.
Now, as I capture my depression in my autobiography, "Navigating Life's Roadways," as a valley moment, a valley experience.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, "So low, you know, again, how low can you go?" As they say in the Limbo Rock. So.
Yeah, and that's interesting because it's the low. It's only our thoughts that label it low. So our thoughts put our mind puts a lot of labels on what it is. Is it low? Is it high? Am I okay? Am I not okay? Whatever. And then when we start believing those thoughts, so even now the lows for me, I switched it up. The lows for me are highs because that's where I'm going to get most of my growth.
Mm-hmm.
So I welcome the lows. And then you said something about, so we're right on track with that. And then you said something about your mother and your mother's passing. It's
yeah.
interesting. Can I ask you right now if you'd like to share, and before I ask you, let me just share something with you with my father. My father died in 2008, and after maybe 5 years of five, six years of having hydrocephalitis, which is basically it parallels Alzheimer's, so he's able to recognize that, you know, every 5 minutes he doesn't remember. And of course, he had to
mm-hmm.
had to
mm-hmm.
up and you know the whole thing. But it's interesting because my father was a man that was very structured, very rigid, and I don't remember him saying, "I love you" once to me. I mean, that's just, that wasn't that generation. But when he was in this state, the last 5 years, my father would tell me he loved me every day. He would hold
mm-hmm.
my hand. He would talk, you know, he was a different man without all of this, protect, you know, you try to protect yourself from,
mm-hmm.
try to not be vulnerable. And so, actually, those were the best years that I've had with my father. And the day of his service, I have to say, it was one of the most beautiful days of my life because, and there's a couple reasons why, but because I had these last 5 years, but also because my son was with me, and my only son. And so I wanted to share, and I wanted to show and be the example of my son how to be okay with death. And I was on stage that day, and after my father's service, my son and I went to the beach, and he asked me, he says, "Okay, Mom, how do you feel? How do you feel now that, you know, Gramps is gone?" I looked out into the you know, sunset, and I looked at him and I said, "Gramps is dead." So I made a joke. In other words, death is a part of life, and there's, you know, you can label it sad or you can label it, you know, but when you focus on what you had as opposed to what you are quote unquote losing. Because just like you said, your mother helped you co-write your books.
Mm-hmm.
And my father is right here at any moment. So it's not a oh, woe is me. I didn't want to do that for me, and I didn't want to do that for my son. But it was a lesson that I had to learn.
Yeah, yeah.
So your mother,
the peace of the whole process
yes,
can bring you to that kind of a place. It was a little bit more difficult to get there with my mother's passing.
Mm-hmm.
As I said, just the suffering. she had several surgeries, you know, the chemo. Mm-hmm. She lost like 60 pounds. She spent 2 months in the hospital. Yeah, and so she was a very robust woman, and so to see her, as I say, go down like that was just, it was difficult, needless to say, for her. And just, like I said, you know, we had some very difficult conversations, and she trusted me. She knew I was strong, so I know she would say things to me that she probably was not saying to my siblings. So, and you know, for anyone out there who has dealt with someone in their last days and months, and you know, yes, we have to accept death, but I, you know, my mother was not there for a while. I think that, you know, certainly makes it more difficult. You know, even one of the surgeons said she's not ready to go, and they were amazed at the amount of grit she was showing in the midst of that suffering. So, but, you know, what helped was probably in those last few days, I would, again, read and sing even to her. And one of the songs I sang in her final days to her was, you know, at the cross, you know, an old hymnal.
Let's hear it. Let's hear it.
Yeah.
I love
at
that.
At the cross. Where my Savior died, and you know, His blood was shed for me, and yeah. So, but what was amazing was in that moment, you know, again, my mother, she at that point could barely talk, but she was kind of mouthing the words, and she just had this most wonderful, loving look on her face, and she was looking at me while I was singing, and you know, that just also brought me a certain amount of peace. At that point, is again, I'm looking at her, so she's looking at me as her firstborn. That's what I kept thinking. And I also read a poem. I can't remember the exact name of it, but the words are, "You shall know a tree by its fruit." And she was also mouthing the words to that one as well. And the other piece is my mother and I also had some very serious challenges, you know, during, you know, our joint lifetime together. And some of it was not very very pretty in terms of
mothers,
our arguments.
Mothers and daughters.
Yeah. And, but, you know, it was overlaid by, like I said, my entrance into the world. And, like I said, I talked to a professional about that as well. And, you know, and others I know who can relate to this is that sometimes when you are born to a teen mother, my mother was also very ambitious. So, you know, in some ways, some of her other goals were squelched in that process. So, in a way, it was like some of the times when we'd be in conflict, it was because, you know, she felt I owed her in some way because I had interrupted her life. My birth had interrupted her life. So that brought some pain into our relationships in terms of expectations.
Yeah.
In terms of, again, particularly as an oldest child, too, what I was supposed to do, not just for her, but also for my siblings. So particularly when I was, you know, in a financial and an emotional place to do that, because I am a pretty strong person. So, but what happened was, that was also very peaceful, my mother apologized to me in her final days. And and I said that really freed me up. I said to also love her the way I wanted to love her. and the work for me to do after she passed away, which I also admit, and I talk about this in my autobiography, is that, you know, forgiveness has always been one of my challenges. So the work for me to do, like I said, she apologized, but there was still work for me to do after she passed away.
Let me just stop you there because, oh my God, there's so much that you have added, and all jewels in of information and real life. That's what the show is about, real life circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing I like to share with my audience is that, you know, we are
so much alike with our challenges. And I mean, we all go through the same type of stuff. I just want to back up a little bit with my father. My father was admitted to hospice, and he was down to and my father was this very strong, strong man, and I haven't shared this with my audience. Very strong man. I mean, a leader.
And
down 114 pounds. So I watched him, just like you're talking about, watching very strong man. And basically, my mother wanted him in her house, and so he was dwindling away. And I said, Mom, he's a social guy. He was dwindling away, and he was dying in her home. Finally, when he was down 114 pounds, we called hospice. And when they took him to hospice, Deborah, this man, I thought I said goodbye to him. This man, 3 months, 114 pounds changed to 120 pounds, 125 pounds, 130 pounds, 140 pounds. He was kicked out of hospice. He refused to die. and it just reminded me of you and your mother, like you said, the fight. It wasn't her time. I love that story. I love that story. And the other thing I want to touch on, there is something in the black community, and I'm black also, with these mothers and daughters. The mothers and daughters, there is something in the community that there is always some type of, I don't know what it is, I have no clue, but there is it's not smooth, let me just say that. It's not a smooth relationship. My mother, who is still alive, disinherited me 6 months before my father died. So I'm disinherited, and I talk to her every single day, and I love her every single day. And one of the things that I wrote about in the book that I've authored, actually I was one of 16 authors, was about forgiveness. Mm-hmm. And you said forgiveness is hard for you, and one of the things that forgiveness is not about forgiving the other person. Forgiveness is about self.
Yep.
And the ability to forgive, basically if you cannot forgive, it's like you're drinking poison every single day.
Yeah.
A big glass of poison. And just like you said, it's a process. I share with my audience, this your evolution, your growth doesn't happen overnight. Be patient with yourself. Be patient with the problem. When you plant a rose bush, when you plant an award-winning rose bush, you're not going to get flowers in a week or 2 weeks. It takes years. So that's another thing. Patience is so important. In fact, the universe created billions and billions and billions of years, and so patience is very, very important with all of it. But the bottom line is wanting. It's the wanting to grow and the wanting to expand and evolve. So that's what I got out of all of your insights and your stories.
Yeah. And I've had conversations with people about it. But again, sometimes we never know where our stuff is rooted. But it is freeing. So I do. I make progress, bit by bit, and it is part of my prayers. And like I said, I even bought a book a number of years ago called Radical Forgiveness. So, being able to make that leap into something like you said that is healthy, even more healthy for me, for the person who needs to forgive. But I also know part of what my challenge is around forgiveness is because I'm also a very giving person. I, again, as an oldest child, like I said, responsibility, accountability, helping take care of other people. So I do give a lot, my time, my energy, my money, and other resources to help people, but, particularly my family. So I know that when a hurt or a slight or something comes, It makes it more difficult, I think, because I did this, for you.
Okay, well, let
how dare
let
you?
Me, yeah, Yeah, let me share with you something about that, because I know exactly what you're talking about. I know exactly what you're talking about. This is what I've had to learn, and I'm just sharing my story. Just because I've done something for years and years and years doesn't mean I need to continue doing it. That's number one. Number two, you said giving person. You know, I've had to really look at that because I'm the same. And what I found was I was giving with an agenda, or I was giving with expectations. Mm-hmm. Expectations of somebody treating me a certain way because I gave to you.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have done a lot less giving because I feel like that I have to be the example of, you know, I really do think that I am the example of the universe on this, you know, in this physical body. And so giving, when I've given, it's because I've wanted to. I mean, listen, talking to a woman every single day and I'm just still disinherited. Are you kidding me? You know how challenging that is?
But, yeah.
And I actually hadn't seen her. She didn't allow me in her house for 5 years. This is the first year that I've seen her since my father died. But giving without an agenda, giving without expectations. If I have expectations of how anybody wants to be or act, I'm done. I mean, it's a formula for unhappiness.
Mm-hmm.
And when I found that I stopped giving, and I used to do the, you know, well, why aren't you doing this? Well, I don't want to. I still love you, but I just don't want to. And this is the best for me. Now, you have a lot of people that are going to either accept it or not accept it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you find out, and I don't care if it's family or friends or whoever it is, coworkers. So you find out who these people really are. And sometimes I was giving because I really didn't want to find out who they were. In other words, who are my real friends? Who's going to really have my back regardless of what I do? My definition of love is I love you regardless of what you do and regardless of what you don't do.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my take on it.
Yeah. And you're right about that. There was another book I read a number of years ago. Actually, it's Rick Warren, The Purpose-Driven Life. Yeah, that book got a lot of exposure probably in the last decade or so. And I remembered outlining, you know, a couple sentences, and one of them was around that issue. And so, yeah, be clear on why you do what you do. Yeah.
That's right.
So, right, and that it is, you know, and lined up correctly with the circumstances, you know, the people involved. And again, are you doing it, you know, purely out of love, you know, kind of unconditional kind of love? Or as you said, is there some type of agenda? And sometimes that agenda or expectation is that, yeah, you will see that you'll treat me like I'm your favorite, whatever, favorite daughter, favorite aunt, favorite whatever, favorite niece, whatever.
Okay. Yeah.
So,
see,
and I guess in some ways my thought was that you would never hurt me.
see, I'm telling you.
Do anything to hurt me, yeah.
Yeah, we're connected because it's the same thing. It's the same thing about, oh my goodness, the favorite. Oh, I can relate to that. I want it to be everybody's favorite, and because I deserve to be everybody's favorite because I'm that good. But
yeah.
The interesting thing is, someone hurting. This is another thing we talk about on our show. It's impossible. It's impossible for anybody to hurt me. It's really impossible for anybody to hurt you, especially when you're centered and you're grounded and you know who you really are. You've heard the whole thing about, oh, I've allowed them to hurt me, and it's really true. Hurt,
yeah.
Offend, ignore. It's really impossible because the other person really doesn't have that much power. At least that's the way I look at it.
Yeah, but you know, but the human side, you know, the everyday side. I know me. Is that there's a vulnerability we all have, and at the right moment in the right circumstances, those arrows can penetrate those vulnerable parts. You know, whether it's through some type of slight or words or even disrespect, whatever it might be. So, and as most people have shared and realized, and it tends to be family, where the worst of it comes from. So,
I understand exactly what you're saying, and that's another thing that I have on this show.
Yeah, because of the connection, the blood, the love. I'm usually quite clear with people. Probably the worst hurts for me have come from family. Yeah.
Okay.
So.
Yeah. And I would think that's for most people also. But let me share again. There are two ways of living. This is my opinion. Either man-made, human, or universal. And with man-made, the hurting. I mean. The labels of and it's all a choice. It's all a choice because I am always, if I stay in this man-made world, I'm always going to be hurt or slighted or insulted. I don't know. This is for me. I've had to elevate myself out of this. I'm not into being human. Deborah, I am not into being human.
Okay, right. Here we go.
Yeah, here we go. No, I've been there, and it's not a happy place to live for me. But anyway, I just wanted to share that. I want to ask you a question. How do you inspire other people? How do you inspire others?
Yeah, by usually sharing my own stories, I think because of, like I said, there's always this balance, this pro and con for some of our experiences. But because I have gone through quite a bit, and as I said, based on the amount of reflection I do, so I'm able to empathize with people quite a bit and help validate them, as you're doing in our conversation, help validate that, what they're going through is okay. This too shall pass. How do we start to redirect? If it's a career issue or, again, I talk to people about their family issues. Again, I've never been married, but I've also talked to friends about their marriage issues. So I feel I talk about gifts and wits. I feel that God has gifted me, with some insights and an understanding of different parts of the world and people that help me be able to move people in ways to hopefully take some action on wherever they are finding their point of pain or their point of misunderstanding or their point of stagnation is at that particular time. And I certainly overlay some of that with, again, my own belief system from religion and from spirituality. I do believe things work out the way they're supposed to, but we have a responsibility to move things along, help move things along, too.
That's so interesting because I do believe that things work out the way they're supposed to. And the other thing I also believe is that, universe, God, whatever label you want to put on it, you can't slow it down, can't speed it up, and you can't stop it from happening.
Yeah.
God's plan is a perfect plan.
Yep.
And not only is it a perfect plan, but it is my responsibility to basically sit back in the back seat and let God drive, let the universe drive without any resistance. And my job is to relax with it all, don't resist any of it, and whatever I'm inspired to do, that's what I'm going to do. And it's, when I say inspiration, the inspiration is coming all the time. But when I try to put my two cents in, and I try to, God, I think I need a little bit more spice over here, or I think I need a little bit more, you know, whatever I want to throw in there, it usually gets spit out. And again, to relax and let the universe drive and just know and trust and surrender to it all. You know, we tell the big, one of the biggest stories in the Bible is the, you know, the story about Jesus before he was crucified, and he's in the Garden of Gethsemane, and he's saying, I don't want to die. I don't want to die. I don't want to die. I mean, excuse me, but no, thank you. And basically, he broke down and said, okay, whatever your will is.
Yep.
And that's the same thing that I teach, and it's the same kind of principle. We really can relax in this life. We really can let go. There is peace in letting go and knowing that the best and the most powerful driver is at the helm.
Oh, definitely. One of the other pieces I do in terms of, you know, work with other people and inspiring them, first of all, I do try to listen, and I ask people questions to find out more who they are, whether I'm in a workshop or in one-on-one. And I try again to very much pick people's gifts from where I see them and help validate them to them in terms of their place in the universe and tie that into their purpose. You know, unfortunately, there's so much negative news out there, and you turn on the TV and it's negative, negative, negative. So so trying to insert positive, you know, in wherever I can. And some of that does come from my own story, or sometimes just getting them to share their own story, you know, and look at how far they've come is also a form of inspiration. And then, as you said, whoever's at the understand what's at the helm. So one of the other pieces I actually coined in my autobiography, Navigating Life's Roadways, is that I said we all have not just a GPS, we have an IPS, I call it an internal positioning system.
I love it.
Yeah, that directs us. That directs us. You know, I often tell people, again, I'm an early morning, early to bed, early to rise. You know, makes a person healthy, wealthy, and healthy, maybe not so wealthy, but wise. But I said, you know, my God, it's by my IPS, speaks to me first thing in the morning. I wake up usually between 4:30 and 5 a.m., you know, have some quiet time, and then I get the message about what I'm supposed to do that day, from working on another book or writing a blog or whatever it is. I get the piece I need to go ahead and start crafting, you know, that message. And, you know, there's an expression, you know, it says, when God says move, move, you know, and then I'm up and at him. I bound out of that bed, you know, ready to work. You know, again, work towards, you know, the purpose I know he has given me.
Yeah, I love that. See, so we're saying the same thing just in different ways, and that's why I love the show, just different perspectives. So you do get their inspiration in the morning, and
out on walks. Again, going back to some of the things I mentioned about my mother's presence and being my spiritual co-author, and, you know, she passed away, and getting my writing journey ignited in a different way. I go out and walk. You know, if I see a leaf moving, or it looks at the signs and signals, and particularly those first few months when I was grieving, and then, you know, had gotten the message from God to go ahead and start, you know, writing this book. I mean, I walk past a tree, a leaf would move in a special way. I'm like, that's my mother, hi.
Oh,
you know, looking up at the sky or whatever.
That.
Yeah. And then even there were other ways that, you know, I tell people it's not that I didn't believe in the next thing for us after we make that transition. So certainly some things have been confirmed. And like I said, I know I've had, as they say, the visitation. You know, after my mother passed away, and you know, one incident in particular had to do with coffee. My mother loved a good pot of coffee. I actually keep her coffee pot on my stove right now. And I was a few weeks after she passed away. I'm sitting in my den. I hear something fall in the pantry in my kitchen, and I go and open the doors. I'm like, okay, what's falling in here? And I looked on the floor, and a packet of coffee had fallen. And I would. on my business trips, I would take the coffee packets from the hotel rooms, and I would bundle those up and take them to my mother. And still hoping for a miracle, I had taken some down there before she passed away. So, and there was no reason for that packet of coffee to fall on the floor. So, but I said, I know she knew that was something I would understand. I said, her way of letting me know all was well.
Ooh, you're giving me goosebumps, Deborah. You're giving me goosebumps. I love those kind of stories. What a beautiful story.
Yep. So, so I said, now she's on my dashboard, our IP, our internal positioning system. You know, we have a dashboard. So each of us should know what's on the dashboard, you know, the functions that keep us going. So I said, my mother's spirit, you know, your faith, your belief system, your purpose, your personality, your gifts and wits, all those are things on your dashboard of your IPS.
Yeah, you and you, your energy is so, you know, I get your energy, it feels, I get this word is it's just helper.
Yes. Yeah, my first job actually out of college was as a social worker. So I do have this helping personality.
Yeah, but let me share something because I can feel you. I really can feel you, and I just want to share something with you. I don't, you know, I'm just feeling it, and you know, the universe is just saying it's you know, there's going to be a time where you're going to just want to start helping yourself. I'm not talking about your clients or anything. I'm just talking about, you know, family. Let's just start taking care of Deborah.
I hear you. Let me share one more challenge that also sent me that message, and you know, I've probably done some work on that. I'm also an 8-year breast cancer survivor, so that was another big challenge. In my life, and through that, you know, again, I did support groups and talked to other survivors, and you know, people said, "What are you getting out of this?" And that was that I needed to take care of myself. So whether you know now spa trips, whatever it is, again, sometimes again, I'm an introvert by nature, and so as they say, when I don't, you know, I need to cut off the noise. You know, I can do that more thanks to caller ID. I don't have to respond to every need or call.
Okay. So I can feel that you're moving in that direction. You're moving in a direction to start. Let's start taking care of Deborah. You know what, sweetie? From the time you were born until probably this date right now, and I don't know about you, but I'm 57 years old, and it's time. It's really time. And I think your mom would love that too. That you would look in the mirror and start taking care of Deborah.
Yeah.
Start taking care of you.
Yeah. And being okay with number of things. You know, the other piece is, needless to say, out of the grieving and particularly in my case, you know, again, the executor handling, settling my mother's affairs, you know, again, as happens in families, you know, some conflict between my siblings and I. And I had to get to a place where I was okay with that. And one of my uncles, my favorite uncle, and I know I was his favorite niece, he and my mother were 2 years apart, so, I mean, they were almost like twins, but he passed away a year and a half ago. And so we used to, he was my wise counselor when it came to some of these issues, and I would talk to him about that, and he would just say, well, you know what, Deborah? Somebody needs to be in charge. They may not always like what you're doing, but press on, because you got work to do to settle this.
And it always comes down to money, basically. It always comes down to money.
Well, actually, you know, in our case, it was more division of labor. Because, you know, my clearing out, you know, our mother's house and you know, trying to make decisions about what to do with it and the things that need to happen to take care of the house until it sold. So I said, yeah, executor doesn't mean that I'm the one who needs to cut the grass or call people to cut the grass. So it was those kinds of things. And, you know, you make decisions differently.
Than
your son. So that was the source of most of our conflict. So I said, yeah, you can be raised with folks and share the same blood, but as your paths diverge, again, your differences, you know, show up. And in our case, it was particularly around decision-making.
Yeah.
So not to say I made all the best decisions, but it was a difficult time, and I know I did the best I could.
Right, exactly.
And our mother passed without a will, so that meant the court. The court had to oversee everything I was doing. So there were reports and things I had to send to them and, you know, and do things that weren't part of my natural set of gifts, you know, to So I had, you know, a learning curve to understand some of the legal terminology and what have you. So there was a lot going on. I just finished settling everything a year ago, and my mother passed in March of 2010. So it was a tough, you know, couple years there with the grieving as well as the legal responsibilities I had as well.
Yeah, geez. So okay, it's definitely time. And I got both of my hands up in the air. I don't know if you can see me. Both of my hands up in the air, and I'm saying it's time to take care of you.
And it's more
massage, and it's more than getting a pedicure. I'm talking about letting go of these people.
Yeah.
I'm not saying let go of them, no loving them or anything. I'm not saying that. I'm talking about letting go of the obligation, because I'm sure they're all adults, correct?
Oh, yeah. The youngest one is 50.
Yeah, well, so there you go. So it's time to let go of these people.
And other people have also talked to me about, and I have, you know, one brother, the one right behind me, who has some other special challenges, but I've had to say on more than one occasion, I'm not our mother.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, several people told me that can happen, you know, particularly in a situation, you know, again, single parent, oldest child, responsibility, accountability. You're right, letting go of that obligation.
I don't have to
fix everything. I don't.
No, and you know what? You can't fix any. You cannot fix anything, and you cannot fix them. I'm not saying they need to be fixed, but you cannot fix a person. You cannot fix anyone. It's all up to what they want to do. And
it's time
to step back and whatever. That's my.
I decided to take a break and just kind of, you know, cut things off for a while. Like I said, it didn't mean I love them, but I also realized that, you know, I need people in my life who are, you know, more supportive
and
more positive.
Now we're talking. That's the
And I got a lot of pressure from other family members about that, and I said, nope. I said, when it's time for me to reengage with them, I will.
Pressure, everybody.
Yeah, and they go, but you're the oldest. I was like, yeah, everybody's grown.
and you know what? Listen, why is everybody everybody is in everybody else's business? Get out of my business. Anyway, you know, I love this. We've come to the end of the hour, and I can't believe how fast this time has flown, but I want to say to my audience, and thank you so much, Deborah. I want to say to my audience, you can find Deborah at www.deborah, spelled DeborahLynnParker, P-A-R-K-E-R. And let me tell you something. Guess what my middle name is, Deborah?
Is it Lynn?
Yes!
The L-Y-N-N?
Not L-Y-N-N, it's L-I-N-N, but that's my middle name.
Oh, my.
No, that's what I'm talking about. I just want to say thank you so much. And for my listeners, thank you so much, Deborah. And you can find her. You can actually go to the info at Blog Talk Radio if you want to find more information out on Deborah. And that's all the time we have in today's show. I want to thank all of you for listening. And if you'd like to receive my free monthly newsletter, send an email to info@rebeccanorrington.com. That's R-E-B-E-C-C-A-N-O-R-R-I-N-G-T-O-N.com. And if you'd like information, on programs I offer, you can go to my website at RebeccaNorrington.com and go to the private session tab on Facebook and like Reality Spirituality. Also, if you want to follow me on Twitter, you can at RL Norrington. And until tomorrow I will be back with a live show with me and the audience, another Reality Spirituality. I want to remind you who you are. You are an extension of the universe. You are a physical extension of the universe, and you are powerful. And during every moment of every day, you have the power to choose happiness over any other emotion. And it doesn't matter what kind of external circumstances you have. During every moment, you have a choice. So remember, think about before you respond. Think about before you react. What are you going to choose? Are you choosing drama? Or are you choosing peace? You know, I like to say that.
Yeah.
Before I open my mouth, I consciously ask, am I going to say something that's going to create drama, or am I going to say something that's going to create peace? But I want to thank you all for listening, and be mindful and be conscious of every waking moment. You have the ability to be happy internally and externally. So let's all connect tomorrow, and you've been listening to Reality Spirituality. Thank you so much, and I love you all.
Thanks, Rebecca.
Thank you, Deborah.
Bye-bye.
Oh, yeah.
It's the newest spirit.
Spirituality.
Yeah, keep your ears open for this one, man.
Spirituality.
You got a question for RLN?
Spirituality.
And it's time to get some answers, baby.
I will talk to you tomorrow. Reality, Spirituality. Thank you all for listening.